Good evening. This is Life Follow, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Follow number 1244, we present two stories written and read by new Life Follow writer Raj Asimi. Raj Asimi was born in 1988 and seduced by literature not long afterward. He travels to unfamiliar places and draws inspiration from the moon, the sun, and seven seas. Raj enjoys reading the timeless writings of the greats. In his writing, especially his stories written from a child's viewpoint, Raj delivers exceptionally telling details and then grants the reader or listener space to come to our own understanding of the situation. He trusts us to listen sharply and to utilize the building blocks he offers to create the full picture. In tonight's first story, parent shields the children she is caring for from a devastating reality. The heartbreak of what is happening outside of her curtain of protection sneaks up on you. Let's listen now as Raj Asimi reads his story, Cat's Cry, tonight on Life Rattle.
Cat's Cry by Raj Asimi. After waiting in line for what seems like forever, we finally reached a door at the front of the school bus and hop down. Everyone scatters around my mom. She bends down and gives me a motherly hug. My face flushes. "Hi, Alexandria," Mom says to my neighbor and fellow classmate in Miss Smith's grade 1 class. "How was your day?" "Good," she replies bashfully. Alexandra's brother, Jonathan, and her sister, Angela, stand behind Mom. My three older sisters, Nadia, Sonia, and Mona, gather around. Nadia is the oldest. Sonia and Mona are twins, and because they do and say the same things, wear the same outfits, and are never apart, we call them by a single name, Sonamona. After Mom looks both ways about 20 times, we cross Dorset Drive, walk up the street, then hang a right onto Darlington Crescent. We live in house number 42. Alexandria, Jonathan, and Angela Savona live in 36. As we approach home, Mom looks down at Angela. "Your father called and said he'd be staying with your mother at the hospital a bit later today," Mom softly tells Angela. She looks up at my mother and then quickly looks straight ahead, her face tinged with sadness. "So, the three of you will be having dinner at our house tonight. We're having spaghetti." Mom unlocks the door and one by one, we enter the house. Although we're squished, our diner-style kitchen table fits all seven of us. I like being squeezed together. I dip a white chocolate macadamia cookie, still warm, into a glass of milk. The perfect cookie has just the right amount of softness on the inside and crispiness on the outside. I gobble down a perfect cookie and look across the table at Alexandria. She dunks a whole cookie in her glass of milk and eats it in one go. Milk drips from her fingers. I giggle. After the cookies have been reduced to crumbs, Mom comes back into the kitchen and collects the plates and glasses for washing. "Time for homework," she announces. "Do I have to?" I groan. "You've got half an hour until Darkwing Duck comes on at 5, she replies. "Just finish up before then and you can watch it." We all make our way to the living room. Angela and Nadia sit at the dining table because they are older. They barely say anything and keep their noses in their notebooks. The rest of us place our homeworks onto the carpet and get comfortable. I have spelling, reading, and math homework. I do spelling first because I find it the easiest. I pull out a list of words and write them down 3 times each in my spelling book. I scribble them down fast. Sonamona and Jonathan sit close together and try to figure out a math problem. I stand up to go to get a glass of water and peek over Angela's shoulder. I see a page full of cursive writing. I briefly wonder what she's written about, and then I remember the glass of water. I open some drawers and make a set of steps. I climb up to the counter, open the tap on the blue side, and fill the cup with water. I gulp it down. I stand there and look at the clock on the wall and wonder how to tell time. I think about the conversation I heard last night when I secretly listened to my parents talk. I pretend to be a ninja and hide behind the curtains. They spoke about Alexandria's mom. A word came up a lot that I've never heard before. It all sounded very serious. I wondered what the word cancer means. I climb back down, push the jars back in, and return to the living room. Alexandria looks up when I stop in front of her. She's finished her homework and colors a drifting cloud in her coloring book. I sit down beside her. I take out a small book from my bag. I have read most of it, but still have a few pages left. "What's the book about?" asks Alexandria. I point at the little girl on the colorful cover. Her soap slips out of her hand as she chases it all over town. I explain. Alexandria smiles and her eyes light up. The sentences on the illustrated pages rhyme. On the last page, the girl finally catches her soap at the edge of a fountain and finishes her bath inside. I open my math book. "I hate math," I tell Alexandria. "I like it," she says. I think for a moment, then pull a cookie from my pocket. "If you do my math, I'll give you this." Alexandria looks at the cookie with melted chocolate chips and lint stuck to it. "Okay," she says, with a big smile on her face. Darkwing Duck is a rerun, but I don't mind. I could watch the same episode over and over and enjoy it more each time. After the show ends, we're all back at the kitchen table, swirling stainless steel forks on our plates of spaghetti. Nadia has a neat ball of noodles and meatball on her fork. Alexandra and I have a sloppy mess on our forks. I laugh when she drops a meatball onto her white shirt. "Aw, man," says Alexandria, tucking her chin into her chest. She wipes off the stain, only making it worse. Everyone eats except Angela. She looks down at her plate and pushes a meatball around. "What's wrong?" asks Nadia. "You look sad." "My bird died this morning," Angela says, not taking her eyes off her plate. Mom, standing by the counter and eating, turns around. "I'm sorry to hear that, Angela." "It's okay," she replies. She was sick for a while, and deep down inside, I knew she was dying. The room becomes silent, except for the noises of forks hitting plates and the chewing and swallowing of spaghetti. "Dad said we'll get another bird," Jonathan says, then sips some milk. Angela looks up from her plate. No bird could replace Charlie. We hear a shriek from outside and look towards the window. "What the heck was that?" the twins say in unison. Mom walks to the window, peers out, and then looks back at us. I don't see anything. We hear the shriek again. It sounds like a baby crying, but not exactly. We hear the eerie shriek every 10 to 15 seconds for the next minute. Tension fills the air. We sit with our half-eaten spaghetti and wonder what's going on. "No one move a muscle," Mom firmly tells us. She opens the side door and walks outside. I hear her say "shoo" a few times. Then she walks back into the house. "It was a cat," Mom says, "and a strange one at that," she mutters. The phone rings about 10 minutes later. Mom, leaning against the fridge with a distant stare in her eyes, jumps when she hears the sound. "Hello?" "Yes, Mr. Savona," she says. "Yes, I'm still here. I'm just so sorry to hear." "Yes, yes, we'll be right there." Mom hangs up the phone and looks over to the kitchen table as we continue eating the rest of our spaghetti.
That was Raja Simi reading his story, Cat's Cry. Our final story tonight is a provocative piece. It will challenge listeners just as our young narrator is challenged when an older boy who his mother babysits after school manipulates him into actions he will later regret. Let's listen now as Raj Asimi reads his story, Tweety.
Tweety by Raj Asimi. The door creaks open. I stand on tiptoes, still grasping the doorknob, and peer down the basement staircase from the top step. Daylight pierces through the small rectangular windows tucked into the corners where the walls meet the ceiling. All is quiet. The echo of the wings of a bird flapping against iron bars of a cage breaks the silence, sounding like a stick scraping along an iron fence as it hits each pole. "Come on, let's go down before your mom gets back," says Fraser, looking over my shoulder. I turn around and look up at him. He smiles. Fraser is in the same class as my older sister. My mom babysits him after school until his father gets home from work. "That boy's as naughty as they come," she always says when she closes the door behind him after Fraser's dad has picked him up. We walk down the squeaky basement steps. Beams of light from the windows reveal floating dust particles that drift down like falling snow. Water drips from the faucet in the basement kitchen. A neatly made bed occupies the far corner. A giant wooden desk littered with paper, pens, paper clips, staplers, and binders of all different shapes and sizes stands beside the bed. Several leather briefcases sit underneath the desk. Family portraits frame the walls. A sectional sofa on the other side of the room faces an old TV. An orange plastic rifle lies beside a Nintendo console on the floor. My pops and I hunt virtual ducks some nights after watching the Toronto Raptors play. They usually lose. I like seeing him get excited when they almost win a game. Fraser and I walk to the desk and look up. Way above our heads, suspended from the ceiling, hangs a birdcage. Tweety, a white cockatoo, stares down at us. Fraser rolls out a gray office chair. He climbs up on it, and the chair dips back, almost throwing him off like a riled up bull. After stretching out his arms and catching his balance, he reaches up to the cage. His fingertips fall about an inch short. He lowers himself into the chair and lets his legs dangle. "Hmm," he says, looking up at Tweety. Fraser grabs the edge of the desk and pushes off, propelling him to a slow rotation. As the chair spins, his eyes move from object to object. When the chair finally stops turning, he spots a dictionary, and not your average dictionary. Thousands upon thousands of pages rest between the hardcovers, with about a foot between them, defining at least a billion words. "Help me lift it," he says. Fraser stands up and makes his way to the dictionary. He is as strong as some of the big kids on the playground. He wiggles the book out from its spot on the upper shelf. The dictionary falls onto the desk, landing on its back with a loud thud. Loose papers fly in the air, gliding here and there to the ground. I walk over to the desk. 1, 2, 3, we say, and lug the dictionary onto the chair. The book must weigh at least 1,000 pounds. Fraser climbs onto the dictionary chair ladder, giving him the extra height he needs. He grabs the base of the cage with both hands and pushes it up, unhooking it from the ceiling. "Got it," he says. Tweety flaps her wings fast and clings to the topmost corner of the cage. Fraser bends down and passes the cage to me. Tweety jumps onto the wooden beam and nibbles at the tip of my finger. He stops and looks at me, blinks, and then nibbles again. "Are you sure she'll like it?" I ask. "Of course she will. My bird loves it," Fraser replies, a long smile spreading across his face. "They like it more than flying." I place the cage on the floor. We sit down beside it and cross our legs. Fraser looks around again. We need something to put her in. His eyes again scan the room. He glances at me. What's wrong? What if she gets hurt? Quit being a girl, Fraser says. I'm not a girl. We'll use that in the corner. Fraser points to a small blue vase with painted red flowers. He stands up and walks over to the vase, picks it up, and sits back down to the floor with me and the birdcage. He pulls out the plastic flowers in the vase and tosses them into the air. They scatter to the floor. Tweety perches on the wooden beam, shuffling side to side, and bobs her head high and low with rhythm. Fraser unlatches the cage door, slides it open, and places his hand inside. Tweety's wings flap rapidly against the iron bars, and the familiar sound echoes again. Fraser wraps his hand around her back and pins her wings down. The yellow and white feathers on Tweety's head stands up. She makes a noise like an alarm clock mixed with a squeaky box spring, a sound I've never heard her make before. I don't know, I tell Fraser. I'm older than you, just trust me, he says. Tweety is trapped in a cage all day. If you were a bird stuck in a cage, wouldn't you want to be free and have fun? I guess so. Fraser shoves Tweety into the vase. Quick, grab the lid on that box of ice cream over there, he shouts. I run to the kitchen counter and grab the empty ice cream box. I sit down and Fraser snatches the lid. He removes his left hand from the opening of the vase and with his right hand swiftly covers the vessel with the lid, muffling the noises Tweety makes. Fraser hands me the vase. I take hold of it, making sure to keep the lid firmly in place. Turn the vase sideways and shift it back and forth. Come on, shake it like how I told you to before, he says. The harder you shake, the more fun you'll have. I shake the vase as hard as I can until I pant. It's like a roller coaster for birds, Fraser says. I hear Tweety thumping against the sides of the vase. She's so quiet now. I think she liked it, I say, but we should probably put her back into the cage before we get into trouble. I remove the lid. I wait for Tweety to walk out. I expect her to be dizzy. I hope to see colorful little birds circling her head like in the cartoon. Tweety doesn't come out. I lift the vase and look inside. It's too dark to see anything. I put my hand inside the vase and feel something warm. I pull out my hand and see blood. I drop the vase. Tweety tumbles out. She doesn't look like Tweety anymore. She's red and white and completely still. I lean over. Tweety. Tweety, wake up, I say. I stare at her. She doesn't stare back. Tweety just lies there, surrounded by plastic flowers.
That was Raja Sami reading his story, Tweety. This concludes Life Rattle number 1244. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Raj reading his stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Achtman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear two more new stories from Raj Sami.